You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out door.
Come over here, kid. Where's up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. And you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar. And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce. Potatoes,
yeah. I eat with gusto, damn, you bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. How you doing? Hope you've enjoyed your weekend. So many things going on. My goodness. Causes a lot of traffic. That's ruined, that's for sure. I drove out to Bodega Bay this morning. They have started a farmer's market. It's a little bit north of the main part of town. But it's a really sweet little market. Today was its third Sunday, and they had remarkable diversity for being so small. I got a chicken that was just harvested yesterday and was not frozen. There was a lot of grass-fed meat. There were gorgeous, gorgeous tomatoes. I think three different vendors, a lot of preserved foods, interesting, different sort of things. Anyway, if you live out there along the coast somewhere, it's really nice to have that market. It's 10 to 1 on Sundays, and right now they're going to be continuing through October, and then they hope to pick it up again in May, and next May, and take it year-round at that point. Also, I want to say happy 25th anniversary to Judy Jordan and the folks up at Jay Vineyards and Winery. They had a really nice party celebrating their 25th year yesterday. And then also happy harvest to Iron Horse. They had a wonderful party today as well. So it's harvest time in wine country. Today we are going to be talking to somebody that I've been trying to meet, and the publicist at Jordan Winery has been trying to get us together for a while. I missed a fabulous party last year at Jordan Winery. Really remarkable rainstorm, and my roof started leaking, and I ended up having to stay home. So we have Todd Knoll, executive chef of Jordan Winery, with us. Hi, Todd.
Hi. Thank you for having us.
I'm doing great.
And I hope you can make this a year. We just finalized the October event, our Halloween event. Uh-huh. So it'll be fun. It's based on True Grit. And
the remarkable invitation just came in.
Oh, you did get it. Fantastic. Yeah, it takes some. It's about a year in advance when we start working on this with our friends at Pineapple Planet. So I think it's going to be a fantastic event.
Cool. So how long have you been at Jordan?
I've been at Jordan since 2003. And I've been the executive chef since 2007.
And when you came to Jordan, were you already up in Sonoma County?
No, actually, I was at the Ritz-Carlton in San Francisco. And so I was commuting from San Francisco, Nob Hill.
Oh.
Yeah, for 6 months. Yeah, it was a little rough. Uh-huh. But the entryway into the winery makes it worth it. You never get jaded by it. It's so beautiful, you know, that drive.
Oh, the drive up to the winery is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, it's like nothing else. Uh-huh. So, yeah, I do my drive. I think about my work and my work day and then drive up and park right next to the kitchen and walk in and then call my friends at the Ritz-Carlton and take pictures of the garden And they hate me.
Of course. But you moved up here since, right?
Yes. I live in Windsor now.
Uh-huh.
I lived in Healdsburg for 3 years, and now we just bought a home. My wife and I have a 2.5-year-old son. We live in Windsor.
Uh-huh. And your wife also works at Jordan, is that right?
Yeah, she's the director of hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
So we're side by side 24/7.
Is that great? That must be great.
It's great.
Uh-huh.
Great. No, it is great.
Uh-huh. What's your son's name?
Petros.
Petros.
So he's Greek. He's partially Greek. My wife's Greek. So he's Petros Thaddeus Knoll. Mm-hmm. And so he's named after his father, his grandfather.
His grandfather.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is it? Let's start with harvest. Mm-hmm. What's happening right now from the point of view of a chef at Jordan?
We've already completed the menus. We will do 3 weeks. So that's all going forward.
You mean you'll do 3 weeks of?
3 weeks of approximately 100 people.
Uh-huh. For lunch?
Yeah, for
lunch.
Okay,
you do harvest lunches.
Yeah, and also our JR, our rewards program. Mm-hmm. So they'll be under the Oaks, and so we'll be doing both formal lunches as well as feeding in the classic French style the entire winery.
Oh, you feed everyone who comes to work
mm-hmm.
For harvest.
Yep.
And tell me some of the things you like to cook right now. Let me guess. I bet you're doing a lot with tomatoes.
Yes. I'm being buried by tomatoes. I actually brought some for you.
Oh, cool. You know, it's fun. We waited this year so long. I don't know if we've ever waited longer for tomatoes. And we waited a really long time last year.
Mm-hmm.
But then we didn't have very long to enjoy them. They went bad really quickly because it was searing heat. And that's not good. This year, finally, tomatoes came on and they're just wonderful.
It's exploding right now. I'm being buried in them. We're dehydrating them. I'm storing them in oil. We're making, this is one of the salts I brought you. That's a tomato salt.
We made an heirloom tomato salt.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I mean, next will be sorbet. And
Oh, that's really interesting.
Isn't it?
It tastes like gazpacho.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was going for. And then this one. Also, our raspberries have been wonderful this year. And so.
Hibiscus salt.
And, oh, that's a hibiscus. And.
Let's see. Should I taste the.
Yeah, maybe I didn't bring the raspberry one.
Okay.
But the hibiscus was from Hawaii, and the salt was actually collected from where I asked my wife to marry me in Kailua.
Okay. Oh, hibiscus. That's really good.
Yeah.
So what do you start with, these salts? What's the base? What kind of salt do you start with?
I start with seawater.
Oh, you start, okay, so you do evaporate it.
Yeah, so off of 1 gallon, we've done it in Crete, Naxos, Athens, everywhere we go.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take seawater and lug it around, and then off of each gallon, it depends. And it's interesting how much it changes, even if there's a rainfall, the salinity,
mm-hmm.
the yield. So in Athens, for instance, we took 1 gallon and got about a cup of salt out mm-hmm. of it, and did it on the rooftop in Athens while the hills were all on fire. So there's actually ash in it.
Ash, yeah.
Yeah, it's really so. Everyone has its own distinctive flavor mm-hmm. and its story, and so I keep trying to tell people about this and to do it. It's really easy. If you don't have the time, you can also do it in your hotel room. You know,
yeah.
And boil it down.
Yeah, I've made salt from seawater before.
Yeah.
And I've done it just leaving it out, you know, leaving it outside and seeing how long it takes.
That's the best way to do
it. Yeah. So tell me about these other ones that you have.
So
here you have, let's see what this is. This is Hanapepe.
Yeah, Hanapepe, that's Kauai. So they've been making salt there forever. It has a really great salinity to it.
Mm-hmm. Nice texture, too.
Yeah, and that one I was able to do slowly, so that's where you get that texture. This is Monterey off of a kayak. This is Goat Rock off of Jenner.
So you just go out there, grab a gallon of seawater.
Yeah.
Now the Jenner is distinctly Goat Rock, really different.
Yeah. It is. And it's interesting. I mean, you get minerality out of it. This is off of Cozumel. That one's really clean. What I also do to intensify that sea aspect to it is I'll make a dashi with kombu and then add that back into the seawater and then take it down again.
Now, for some people who don't know what dashi is, basically it's almost like a fish stock, but just made with kombu.
It's used made as
a basis for a lot of Japanese dishes.
Yeah, it's one of the quickest stocks you can make. You can buy a tea bag of it, actually. Mm-hmm. But what we do is you bring over 15 minutes the seaweed that's off in Hokkaido in the north of Japan. Bring it up just below a simmer, and then take that out. Then you add flakes of bonito, the dried tuna, and wait till it falls, perhaps over 30 minutes. Sometimes I'll introduce dried mushrooms from Jordan, and then you have a stock right there. Yeah. It's much faster than making fumé, and it's clean. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to the tomato stock. How did you make that? I mean, the tomato salt.
We sliced, this was primarily Sweet 100 tomatoes, sliced them in half, and we used an Excalibur dehydrator, which is available on Amazon. Fantastic machine. Dried it over about 24 hours, and then used a coffee grinder and pulverized it with the salt from, we've used the Hanapepe or Malden salt from England.
So you took the salt and the dried tomatoes. Yeah, that's very interesting, and it's amazing how much it tastes like gazpacho.
Yeah, and it works really well with meats and fish. And just like the classic salts of Hawaii, the iodine and everything works very well with the blood and meat. Mm-hmm.
Well, I can tell anyone who knows me knows I can talk about salt for a really long time.
Well, you can keep all of these.
So anyway, we're talking about what you like to cook with right now during harvest. What are some of the menus that you're working on for your harvest lunches?
Well, it's. I hope you make it up there. But we do Mexican food on Mondays and Wednesdays. Fish always on Fridays. They're beautiful meals. It's pretty incredible. The company's very generous with what we do with our harvest lunches. I buy whatever I want. We'll be doing pork belly, ribs. We always do enchiladas. We're doing what no winery really does anymore. We feed 100 people beautifully. It just doesn't happen. It's a huge expense.
Yeah, it is.
It's a lot of work.
So when you're doing the formal lunches for a variety of guests, I would assume members of the wine club maybe, invited guests, but then at the same time you're also feeding the people who are picking grapes, the people who are working in the cellar, everywhere. Are you feeding them the same thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a classic French tradition. And so everyone eats the same thing. Some people are more comfortable in one place, some people in another. But everyone comes together and they eat the food that we produce. And it's a beautiful thing that's unfortunately disappearing.
That's too bad. I think so. I see some people doing similar things every now and then. I know one thing out at Safari West.
Yeah.
They do staff lunch and staff dinner every day. And everyone eats together, and I think that's really cool.
It's great. It brings everyone together. I try not to see the accountant so much, but
yeah, you don't have to think. Think about that.
But
part.
We all come together, and and it's fun.
So,
everyone loves it.
What inspired? Tell me about your Mexican menus. I'm a huge fan of Mexican food.
Well, our enchiladas are fantastic. Our tamales are amazing.
Tell me what type of enchiladas?
Well, I bring in Curuboto pork butt, and then we cook that down, and then I turn over the ladies. So,
you got some of the okay, cool.
Yeah, all of our.
So you got some really authentic flavors.
Yeah, everyone comes together. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Rick Bayless and Kennedy, but they love doing it, and so it just becomes a whole group effort.
Yeah, so you get like real Mexican home cooking. Mm-hmm. There's nothing, moles and tamales. Mm-hmm. Every now and then, you sort of hear the tamale on the tamale trail. So and so is selling tamales, and it's like, okay, I'll take 100. Haven't heard about that in a couple of years, but I know they're out there.
Well, I'll email you. You have to come on that day. They're very good at it.
Okay, so how much time is it? Your job as executive chef, how much time is actually working with making the food compatible with Jordan wines?
We're always doing it. As we only have two wines, it's intuitive at this point.
Right, yeah.
So I believe, and our winemaker, Rob Davis, believes that it's good fine, good food, good with good wine and good company. So what we try and do is play around with it and push the envelope. Fruit forward wine, our Chardonnay being more acidic, and so I do Asian preparations, and so it's fun wine to work with. They're only two, but they're great wines, and they're great food wines.
Only two, but they're two classics.
Yeah,
and of course the other Chardonnay, of course, but then also Cabernet, and Jordan Cabernet has certainly had a reputation as one of the great Cabernets of California, and I like it because. Its label looks like it's connected to me.
I know. I love your last name.
we've used this for family celebrations, and I've given both my daughters, I've given bottles and that sort of thing. Plus, I have a friend whose first name is Jordan. So this one has been part of many, many celebrations. We're going to take a quick musical break. When we come back, I have a feeling we're going to try one of the wines. that song, Punalu'u, by the incredible Ulavehi Guerrero, about a very beautiful, beautiful beach on the east side of Oahu, getting up towards the top of the island where you start finding all of these shrimp trucks. Okay, Todd, you're going to open the Chardonnay. Yeah. We're going to give that a try.
We're opening the 2009, our current release of the Chardonnay. And having been raised in Hawaii, this is a fun wine to work with. The wines are crisp and not overly oaked and work very well with Asian preparations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's two glasses.
There you are.
So were you born in Hawaii?
I was born in Monterey. My sister was born in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. What took your family there?
My father had a construction company. And so when I was three, I decided to move. And so I was really raised there, but I was an Army brat in the beginning.
Uh-huh. But then you went and you were in Kailua, you said.
Yep, Kailua and then Kahala.
Kahala.
And then lived right at Diamond Head.
Uh-huh. Oh, and Diamond Head's so beautiful there. Yeah, so how long did you live there?
Until I was 20, I came to California. Then I went back for 6 years. Then I came back to go to culinary school.
Mm-hmm. So do you find that you, sort of the foundation... Or do you find that you were really influenced by your years, from a food point of view, by your years in Hawaii?
Yeah, I was a minority, really. Mm-hmm. And my parents were both great cooks, and I cooked all the time. I wanted to cook when I was a little kid. I'd save up my allowance and cook quesadillas or Mexican food. I mean, you're surrounded by different cultures. Mm-hmm. So it was really fun. And you're surrounded by the ocean. So it becomes just part of being part of the land, fishing every day, diving and collecting mm-hmm. lobster and different reef fish and things. So mm-hmm. it worked out well.
How do you make your kalua pig?
Three different ways. We can do it the hard way and dig the emu. I also have a kahachina, which is the...
Yes.
Which is
do
great.
Do you make kalua pig? And I was just looking at the kahachina out at Iron Horse, and I'm in about 3 weeks, I'm making kalua pig for maybe 130 people. And I was wondering if I should use one.
Yeah. Do the pork butt. Rub it in with... and then if you want to introduce more smoke flavor, those liquid smokes they're not artificial products.
And I just made kalua pig last week, smoke and Hawaiian
the
alea salt.
Yeah. Yeah,
so you do it in the kahashina.
Yeah, I've done it that way. Then we also have our wood-fired pizza oven.
Uh-huh.
I've done that way. And then in the oven as well. Mm-hmm. That's the way my mother does it.
Mm-hmm.
So just coarse salt of some kind, celery or alea. And hickory smoke, wrap it in banana leaves or tea leaves or mm-hmm. both, and wrap it in foil and cook it at a very low temperature over a long period of time, uh-huh. 5-6 hours, and it's perfect.
Yeah. How long do you put it in the kahachina?
Kahachina is quicker because you have the...
It's like about four hours?
Yeah, it's okay, fast because you have the coals above and below mm-hmm. the meat. Yeah,
those boxes. The kahachina, and you could look this up. It's kahachina. You can look it up online if you want to see what it looks like. It helps to visualize it. Basically, it's a very lightweight box mm-hmm. on wheels with an aluminum handle. And last year, I cooked 18 chickens in one for my daughter's wedding.
Aren't they great?
And mm-hmm. things just turn out really good.
The first time I discovered it was in Miami years back, mm-hmm. and I bought one immediately. And they're very affordable.
Yeah, they're not expensive.
Yeah.
So you came over here. You were 20, mm-hmm. and you came to California for a while, but you went back.
Yeah, did some college, went back to work for my father in construction management, and then he passed away, and I decided I wanted to cook. Mm-hmm. So I came back to California and wanted to be on this side. I went to the California Culinary Academy, mm-hmm. Which at that point was privately owned, which it no longer is. And I would have gone to the CIA. I love the CIA. I go every year. Uh-huh. But I knew I wanted to be here. Mm-hmm. So
you mean by here, you mean Sonoma County?
Yeah, in California.
California. And yeah. So you would have gone to the CIA Hyde Park.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm fifth generation Californian. So,
oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Fifth generation. And what part of the state is your family from?
All ranchers, mm-hmm. Down south, Salinas.
Yeah, you got. I'm second generation. I'm always proud of that. Fifth generation. Wow.
Yeah, San Francisco. My parents were married in San Francisco. Yeah, I'm proud of it.
Yeah, it's you know, it's not that common to meet Native Californians and then to have them go back, you know, a few generations. So how does the cooking that you did, that you grew up with, and the flavors, and you know, Hawaiian cooking? If you don't know Hawaiian cooking, some people just think, "What? You know, white rice? You know, mac salad? What's the big deal?" But if you know it, there's just something about the way those flavors come together, but also something about the way everyone eats the same thing, and the way potlucks are. That is, I find really engaging. I'm just wondering how that sort of informs what you do in a much different, certainly much different context and much different flavors. But I'm wondering how your Hawaiian background might influence you.
It's always a subtext. I mean, it's in my brain. Those mm-hmm. flavors. I don't work by recipes by rote purposely, but growing up with so many diverse foods and cultures. Mm-hmm. And my father being in the construction business, we'd have groundbreaking ceremonies and mm-hmm. topping off parties. And so there'd be Filipino food, Samoan food, mm-hmm. you know, classic Hawaiian food. And those flavors, I love it. And I love the white rice and the mac mm-hmm. salad.
What about, do you make poi?
I don't like poi.
You don't? Okay. I like poi. It's the only thing so far that I suck at making.
I've never tried it. I should try it.
I have not. I watched some young men... in Hilo, there's all kinds of things going on during the Merry Monarch Festival, mm-hmm. and there was this little group that were pounding poi, and boy, it's something you just really put your whole body into it, and you work that root for a really long time to get it to be the texture, and I haven't mastered that yet. I may never.
I use it for chips. I love seeing it when I go hiking. Uh-huh. It's beautiful to see it growing.
Oh, a taro or kalo field is absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. And actually, I didn't like it the first few times I tried it. It was like, oh, no, this is troublesome. But then I find if you put, and I like it when it's aged a little bit, so it starts getting sour.
Yeah.
With crunchy salt on top of it. And with a little bit of Kahlua pig on the fork, that's a really good flavor combination.
I should revisit it. It's just a childhood memory of that. That was part of our school lunches on Thursdays.
Oh, I can just imagine. That would be scary.
But that was a big deal, and it's amazing. There was a shortage of it a few years back, more than a few years back. But people were lining up at 5, 6 o'clock in the morning because there was such a shortage of
taro.
They needed their poi.
Oh, interesting. What had happened? Was there a crop failure?
I think there was some time. I was living here at the time, but mm-hmm. it was a big story.
Yeah. If you ever get a chance to see a taro field, the first one I saw was up island on Maui, my first trip. And we went up this, oh my gosh, this really treacherous, curvy, curvy, curvy road forever. I was half dead when we got there. And they drove way in the back. And we were told that the taro fields, which were terraced, and mm-hmm. they always have water running over them, constant bath of water. We told they were there since like the 15th or 16th century or something, and they're just really beautiful to see.
They're beautiful. Those, and then reminds me also of the fish ponds are also beautiful.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the menehunes building the fish ponds.
Yeah, no, I'm hoping to see that. There are some that have been reconstructed on Hawaii Moku, I hope by the Kanaka Oli Foundation, and I hope to visit those, but I haven't yet. So anyway, bringing all that forward, how do you cook at a winery? How do you decide what you're going to do? How do you put your menus together?
Well, it's kind of interesting. My sous chef, Manuel Reyes, and myself, we will go down to the garden at least once every other day. Mm-hmm. And then it comes from there. I talk to my purveyors. I work with Honolulu Fish Company, which is a fantastic company. I can actually go online and then bring up a shot of them choosing fish at the auction.
Oh, really?
And
is this the auction in Oahu?
Mm-hmm. And I could say, I want that tuna. And then I'll see the guy in the white coat I know, and he'll pull that fish. And if I order it by 2 o'clock, it'll be at the winery by 10.
By 10 the next day?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, they're one of FedEx's largest customers.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, it's beautiful. Most of that prime 1++ tuna goes to Japan.
Yes.
But yeah. I grab as much as I can.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Onaga. I use a lot of the Hawaiian fish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love it. And I have friends that dive, and they'll bring me the mempachi, those little tiny red fish with the large eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't buy those commercially.
No.
And they'll send them to me. Yeah.
So and they're catching them over there mm-hmm. and getting them to you?
Yep.
Oh, interesting.
Off of Kailua and, mostly off of Kailua.
Mm-hmm.
Little caves. They're mm-hmm. deep. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to be brave to be going for
yeah.
that fish. That's not something that I would find myself doing. So you go to the garden and you get your fish. It's amazing that you can actually see them at the auction. And then what are some of the other, are you working with local meats?
Yeah, nearly all of our meats are local. Everything I can do is local. Our cheeses, uh-huh. our meats, Sonoma lamb. We just introduced cattle in the past month.
Oh, we have cattle
at
the estate.
So that's the next step.
Interesting.
So I have some homework to do.
Uh-huh. Now, do you know what kind of cattle?
Yeah, we did Wagyu beef, and mm-hmm. There's some longhorns
mm-hmm.
just for fun. Visual aspect. You can see them over the rock wall.
Uh-huh.
Pretty neat. So that's the next thing to figure out.
Uh-huh. And then do you have you said Sonoma lamb. Are you buying the lamb or do you have estate lamb?
No, we don't have estate lamb.
Who are you working with?
I work with Del Monte Meats.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, Bruce Bailey. He's great. He's one of the sales managers. And he does everything to my spec.
Mm-hmm.
They're fantastic. You know, local quail, local... Everything's as local as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say that. Some of our veal comes from, Hudson Valley. But besides that, it's pretty much local.
Uh-huh.
Milks, we make our own yogurts. We make our own jams. Everything's in-house, our pastries. Yeah.
Okay, tell me about making yogurt.
Very simple.
What
have you
milk
done
do you- Oh, yeah. I make my own yogurt when I have the time. But I'm curious, what milk do you use?
I've done it a couple different ways. I've done it with whole milk and with skim milk.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer the whole milk. And then what I do is I introduce the culture, and then I use a Greek yogurt, and I'll put a few tablespoons of that in.
Uh-huh.
That's the what's it called? Fagur. Greek yogurt's mm-hmm. excellent yogurt. And so I steal their cultures, and I...
Mm-hmm.
Do it, and it's done in 8 hours, and it's mm-hmm. it's beautiful.
And how do you keep it? Do you use a yogurt maker? Do you put it in the oven? What do you?
I use a Yogourmet.
Uh-huh. It's,
you can find it on Amazon for $40.
Yeah,
it's a great. Keeps it at about 130 degrees, I think, uh-huh. something like that.
Yeah, yeah. I've done it by putting it in, getting the milk to the temperature, and then just getting a thermal bag. I heat the towels in the oven. I pack it around the jars. I've done it in the oven. And then somebody just gave me a yogurt maker. So I'm going to do it that way.
I used to put
it
on saddlebags and ride around. So it's not rocket science, but it's really good. And it saves you probably 70%.
Yeah.
And you have your own yogurt.
You have complete control over it. And if you read the labels of even yogurt, and I don't want to name any names, but even yogurt that I have considered very good, you start seeing things like gelatin and other additions where yogurt is really, you just need milk and culture. That's all.
Yeah, and then instead of using gelatin, we'll strain it a bit to get the whey out. And that's also a really healthy drink.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So we'll strain out a little bit until we get the consistency mm-hmm. we want.
And then I'll sometimes put the yogurt that I've made, I'll put it into like quadruple layers of cheesecloth
mm-hmm.
and strain that out more, and you get a fabulous cheese.
Yeah.
So really, really
great
cheese. Consistency of cream cheese, but also really healthy. I think we're going to take another little musical break here on Mouthful, and we will be right back.
Oh, no, Levi. sahike nanni valle no na vai Kaulu vehi vehi o kamalo I kamali e pua kalau nu makikai o no Malini Aina uve Ikanoe ahi ahi Uwalave mai Ikamakani Oolua Pua Kalaunu Makikai
My guest this evening, Todd Knoll, executive chef of Jordan Winery. Jordan, of course, off Alexander Valley Road in Alexander Valley, one of the best known, I think, and most enduring wineries of that area. What year was Jordan Winery founded?
I believe our first vintage was 1976. I believe it was founded in 74, mm-hmm. but I don't give the tours. I might be off by a year or so.
Okay, yeah. 70s. 70s.
Mid-70s.
76 was a
We're coming
really
up on our
year.
Anniversary next year.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So we're just talking about what it takes to put together menus. Right now you're entertaining, you're doing harvest parties. And when harvest parties are over and, you have your big Halloween fete, what happens next throughout the year? Who are you cooking for? Who are you, who do you feed?
We feed guests of the winery, people that are involved in our rewards program. Depending on your point level, you are invited to have an individual tasting.
So you join the wine club Mm-hmm. You make purchases and...
And then you accumulate points and then you can cash them in. Then it goes to lunches, fishing trips, dinners.
Fishing trips.
Yeah. We have two lakes that are stocked with bass. It's like a fishing show. It's amazing. They're huge, and it's every cast pretty much brings in a fish.
Really? Okay. Yeah. No, I don't. I thought I knew everything about Jordan. I clearly don't know about this.
Yeah, we have three bass boats now. John's a huge fan of fishing for bass, and mm-hmm. so and as is our director of facilities. Every Sunday, everyone's out there. Anyone that works at the winery is welcome to fish. I generally fish from shore in the lower lake, and then we have the upper lake. Mm-hmm. And then I think it's two or three times a year they're fed with fingerlings of trout. So they're stocked in, and then they also add some lunkers just so you might catch a big trout as well. So it's fun.
Oh, really? Oh, that's really interesting. I've been thinking about trout. I was actually thinking I really want some.
Come
mountain
on.
River trout, you know. I know somebody on Facebook posted a picture of like 9 trout she had caught somewhere near Yosemite. And it just got me thinking there's just nothing like fresh caught trout.
Oh, that's great. Little beer on it, some cayenne pepper over a fire. It's good eats.
With the holidays coming up, do you do a lot of entertaining at the winery for the holidays?
Sure, we do Christmas at Jordan. Is a big one.
And who attends that? Is that just family and employees? Or?
JR members.
Oh.
Yeah, trade as well.
Okay. And when does that take place?
This year, I don't know the date. It'll be in December. Uh-huh. And it will be between 200 and 300 people.
Oh, so it's a big fet.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do for that?
Changes every year. Still trying to get through Halloween, but... my wife's working on that one. I can't remember what the theme is for this Christmas, but it's always special. We've done, you know, Winter in Wonderland. We change it every year.
Mm-hmm.
We're thinking about doing ice skating rinks, and it's always over the top.
So you get a chance to really create an entire atmosphere
mm-hmm.
rather than just...
Oh, no. Just... And usually it'll be three different venues. So you'll come into one room. And then come into another, and it blows up in a different venue, and then open one more door, and then it turns into dancing.
So oh, what fun!
It's all a reveal.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. What can you tell us about last year's Halloween party?
Last year's Halloween party was a great time
because I know the invitation was a wooden coffin.
Yeah.
About 10, 12 inches long, and then it had a flash drive,
mm-hmm.
and just this flash drive in the coffin. And the coffin was lined. It was really
with
wild.
A cross.
Oh, that's right, a cross. And then you found out the details by plugging in the flash drive, and it took me a few days to realize that. It's like, oh, where are the details?
So how
did the party? I was so sorry to miss it, but it was, if you remember, yeah. It was an extraordinarily bad storm. And I just had a new roof put on, and suddenly water is coming through it like a sieve. So.
Oh, it was fantastic. Yeah, too bad you missed it. But it was great. This year we didn't do a flash drive. We sent the movie, which you've seen.
Mm-hmm.
But we did the flash drive and the silver chain, and we had people dressed up. We did contact lenses, so they had red eyes and fangs. We had fangs. It was beautiful. And then, we did the three vignettes.
And what sort of vignettes? Can you describe the vignettes?
The most important one was the last. We had the coffin open. We had one of our servers in the coffin. Welcoming people in, and then that's when the music happened, and it was really beautiful. Mrs. Jordan, John's mother, thought everyone was a little bit skeptical about the vampire thing, but it was a wonderful time.
Oh, it's the perfect time to do.
And then the food and. You know, we do drinks and different foods and bloods and yeah, mm-hmm. we camped it up. It was fun.
Uh-huh. So do you like doing food in that way?
Yeah, I love it. I'm really looking forward to doing the next event because doing upscale cowboy food.
It's sort of like upscale chuck wagon.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do little corn muffins. We just did for Taste of Sonoma with Wagyu beef and little picks in it and something with beans. I haven't figured it out yet, but mm-hmm. it's going to be fun. Mm-hmm. So I always like doing that.
You like doing those kinds of upscale weird themes. There is a dinner I have to tell you about. There's a book in English. It's called Against the Grain. Mm-hmm. In French, it was called Au Rebours. And it was by J.K. Weissman, written in the late 18th or 19th century. And it was sort of considered, you know, the Bible of the decadence. Mm-hmm. And in many other books, someone is reading that book. And it was just this, like, messed up guy who overindulged in everything and then grew bored with it. And he sent out an invitation. I'm telling you, I've always wanted to recreate this dinner, and I've never done it. He sent out funeral invitations, and they were in honor or in memory of the host's temporarily lost virility. And he had all of the pools were drained and replaced with black ink, and he had all these funereal, you know, junipers and all these different – the landscape was totally changed, and then the menu was entirely black. And the description of it is so wonderful. And I was always going to recreate it when I got my master's degree, and I never quite finished my thesis. So I've never done it. But if you like that sort of thing, in fact, I will find it somewhere. I just have that page Xeroxed. It's a really, really fun menu.
We've done Pearl Harbor. We've done quite a few historic events, and those are fun to recreate. Mm-hmm. And the Titanic was one of our first that was really intricate. So I took the original Titanic menu, used the same stationery style. We blocked it out and used the dishes, but then upscaled,
upscaled the menu.
Yeah. So that was fun.
Fun. Well, one thing we should talk about before this hour is up is the wines that we're drinking here. So talk to us about the Chardonnay. It's the, did you say 09 Chardonnay?
Yeah. And so the Chardonnay is fantastic. Not just tooting my own horn since I don't make the wine, but the acidity. I'm not a huge fan of oaky Chardonnays.
Yeah, neither
and
am
so
I.
This is very food friendly.
Yeah, really good acid.
Crisp acid, yeah. Very little time on oak. And so what I do when pairing food with it is I will typically go more towards the Asian side or something that will push acid back against the food. Mm-hmm. I don't contrast so much, although sometimes I will, depending on the group. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you could do a classic beurre blanc and then touch it with ancho chili pepper or something. But this will go with even a salad. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go to with a low amount of acid in the dressing.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't fight with the acid.
Yeah, I wouldn't do a French version, which would be 3-1. I'd go more 4-1 or use citrus rather than vinegar.
And then let's talk about the Cabernet. This is the 2007 vintage.
Mm-hmm. Now this, you get that great blackberry, integrated tannins. Works very well with food, and because it's so fruit forward, I can play with it on the food side by using, you know, a classic duck à l'orange or using raspberry sauces, and it's not going to pull away from the wine because it has so much to show from the other side. So what I do as a chef at the winery is I'm trying to show how far I can push the wine, and that it works well with any type of food.
Mm-hmm. So what might be some of the more non-traditional pairings you would do?
Well, most wineries would be afraid of using a wine like this with a fruit-forward sauce,
mm-hmm.
but it works
mm-hmm.
because it has it there, and the tannins aren't that much there.
No, the tannins are really, they're very mannered. Mm-hmm. They're very long.
Yeah.
It's very silky on the palate. One thing I've always liked about Jordan Cabernets is I find plenty of pepper, both black and white pepper, mm-hmm. not in a way that fights with the other flavors, but it's just sort of there in a very pleasing way. And that's probably one of the qualities I like best about this varietal.
It's great, too. I love that, but I also bring it in. As much as possible, I bring the grill into play,
mm-hmm.
or the smoke, because that brings the tannins back into play, too. So a lot of our food is grilled a la minute and or done in our huge pizza oven, which is fun, too.
Sure. For somebody at home, somebody's got a bottle of Jordan sitting around. How about some recommendations for them?
For the Cabernet, one of my favorite dishes would be a grilled duck breast.
Mm-hmm.
Grilled Sonoma duck breast. I really love it. Just the richness
mm-hmm.
with the tannins in a current release mm-hmm. is beautiful.
Whose stock do you use these days?
Right now, we're getting it through a couple different purveyors, one from Hudson Valley and one through Del Monte.
Mm-hmm. Sometime, if you get a chance, try the duck from Salmon Creek Ranch.
Oh,
they're fairly new. And they've actually been out there 4 years, but people are just starting to get to know them, and they do really – they're doing Muscovy duck.
Yeah.
They also just introduced their very first grass-fed beef. They're out between Bodega and Bodega Bay, and their beef is – I hate to say the best of anything, but I think I'll go out on that limb for them. Their beef is the best I've ever tasted – the best grass-fed
really?
Beef I've ever tasted. Had – they gave me I went to visit, and it was the day that they were just unloading their beef for the first time, and they gave me a ribeye and asked me to try it. And I was astonished by it. It's really extraordinary.
Oh, neat. So, well, definitely call them.
Because there hasn't, we have Liberty Duck,
mm-hmm.
and it's still possible to get Sonoma foie gras. I think that's called artisan foie gras now, but it's not quite as readily available as it has
been. I use their duck and their foie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And actually, the quality is much better than the Canadian stuff.
Oh, yeah.
They're doing a great job.
Yeah, they are. They are. We're nearly out of time. Is Jordan open? Jordan's open by appointment, right?
Yes.
So people can just give a call mm-hmm. and arrange to come out and see the facility. The winery is absolutely beautiful. Just gorgeous. This is a great time if you're to go.
It is beautiful. It's an interactive tour. So it's not just coming in and having a glass of wine, but you see my gardens. You're welcome to bother me in the kitchen. And
oh, really? So people can come chat in the kitchen?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Cool. And what do tours cost?
You caught me on that one.
That's okay. I want to say $15, but I'm not positive. But, it really is one of the beautiful estates of Sonoma County.
Yeah. No, even having worked there for so long, I would go on the tour. It's beautiful, and I give complete access to. And if I have time, I will take guests down to the gardens.
Uh huh.
And now I can show them cows.
Yeah, you can show them trout.
Trout and bass.
So. Well, thank you very much for taking time away from your family on a Sunday evening to come talk to us on Mouthful.
Thank you,
I really appreciate it. And if you want to know more about Jordan Winery, you know what to do. You can just Google it, and you'll get right there. You can also, if you have any questions or comments, you can send me an email at catsmilk@sonic.net. And be sure to meet me back here next week. We're going to be talking about potatoes grown on a blank road. Potatoes and a number of other things grown on blank road. And we'll also be having our annual conversation with Doug Gosling about the upcoming Calabash taking place the first weekend in October. So have a great week. Meet me back here for another episode of the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour.
Mouthful is produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. It's engineered by Lawrence Alberti and Eric Black. For more information about Mouthful, email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also go to krcb.org and download podcasts of Mouthful, as well as from iTunes. And the moral of-
of this story. Well, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too. And he'll sing,
to the Lord that praises me, it's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord that praises me, it's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord that praises me, it's time for dinner now, let's go.
Let it be.
It's time for dinner now. Let's go.
We got some beans.